I'm Pave, Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Unpaved. He is Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. It's December 18th. We're a week away from Christmas, and we've got a ton of football going on. We got bowl games. We got college basketball rolling, but we're getting close to the NFL playoffs, and you can feel teams are starting to get to that point where, you know, everything starts tightening a little bit. You wanting to get to the playoffs and show that you belong in this NFL. So we're going to start with our Thursday night preview. We're going to talk. Tom Brady did some talking about, you know, we asked kind of similar to the Philip Rivers stuff of him coming back. Bears Stadium, could they go to Indiana? Saw that today. And then next year's college football playoff. I think we really want to get into that later in the show because they're changing the way this works every single year, it feels like. So we'll get into that. But first, Sean, before we get to Thursday night football, how are we feeling on this Thursday, just a week out from Christmas?
Phenomenal. I'm still tripping that your Bulls won last night.
I know, right?
At home. Of all the damn things, I didn't bet the game, but I should. I was. It's only because I forgot.
Yeah.
I swear I forgot to bet the game later.
Practice last night, I forgot to bet it too. I was going to bet.
And the Bulls didn't just beat them. They curb stomped them. So that was on my mind, just laughing. Sports is wacko. And I can't wait till we dive into the Cam Ward stuff. I love the kid. But I'll just leave it at that. So I'm excited, man. It's a great Thursday. Like and subscribe our YouTube page.
At Unpaved Sean Salisbury.
Yep. That's exactly right. And I think you'll love it. We got so many things looking forward to in 26, but we don't mail it in during the holiday season. We're going to be here up until day before Christmas. We'll do the show, and then we're right after. And so we're not going anywhere. We put it up because we know you guys still like your stuff. So, but I'm pumped about this show. There's a lot to talk about. And I do believe a broadcaster could come out and in a month be ready to play. I do believe that.
A couple that could do it.
I believe it 100%.
Really wanted to. But first, before we get to Thursday Night Football and this excellent Rams Seahawks matchup and what we expect in this, tell me about Augusta Precious Metals.
Yeah, I want to. It's almost like I want to stand up and pace like I'm giving a Zig Ziglar speech or Tony Robbins. All I'm asking you to do is inform yourself about precious metals, and Augusta Precious Metals is the place to go. About the last 18 months, 2 years, I've deep dived into precious metals and what they're about, because you start to think, a lot of people just don't get it, late to the party. But if your dollar value is one thing and gold's going up, why in the world wouldn't you invest in gold or precious metals, that tangible asset? And I look around, we watch sports all the time. That time clock's ticking, folks. I'm just telling you, the time clock is ticking. Hopefully you'll all live till we're 102, which also means you better be more urgent with your retirement, the confidence and peace of mind you're going to get from it, right? If that time clock's going, but man, people are living longer. So what does that mean? You better be more prepared for retirement. And isn't it just logic? Do I need to take a sledgehammer to my head and anybody else's to say, if I'm getting a better ROI in return and or in my peace of mind and confidence is more secure with precious metals, what am I doing? Go inform yourself and educate yourself. That's the great thing about Augusta Precious Metals. Yeah, everybody likes to take money and money grabs in life, not Augusta Precious Metals. They want to educate you. So moving forward, you continue to understand why. It is always about the why. You can also get the $40 trillion threat report, which is just a simple short guide. You go in there when you about gold and the ups and downs about, well, finances, but what precious metals and Augusta Precious Metals does for you to ensure that confidence we're looking for. Just go on. There's a link in my description. You text Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052. And it's just a short free guide. Go check it out. But more importantly, inform yourself as you go and toggle through Augusta Precious Metals. Simple, not long. Nobody wants all that. Here's what we all want when it comes to investment. Is it secure? What am I giving? What am I getting? In any part of life, you buy a piece of real estate, what's it going to look like 10 years? Does it have the eight? Does it fit into that box? Well, in order to fit into a box for your security, sometimes you got to get outside the box of your comfort zone and go find something in order to get into the comfort zone. See, we are on an unpaved show. Get on the unpaved road. It's a great one, but we all want to finish on that paved road, right? But unpaved could take us there. Get on there. Get to Texas. Yeah, get to Texas too. That's not a bad place. Augusta Precious Metals. Get in there again. You can text Sean, S-E-A-N, to 35052. That's the link. Text Sean to 35052. Just take a look when you have a minute. Educate yourself. Because I'm telling you, you're going to get left behind. Just like college coaches do in recruiting if they're not involved in NIL. Don't get left behind. Let Augusta Precious Metals pull you into this so you can be the truck, not the trailer, and pull some of your friends in to secure their retirement and their confidence in that retirement. It affects all of us, and you don't want Washington to have a hand over you nor the dollar. Protect yourself and have that confidence. Augusta Precious Metals, it's text Sean 35052 to figure it all out and educate yourself.
As always, thank you to Augusta Precious Metals. All right, Sean, big Thursday night matchup this week. We got the Rams traveling up to Seattle to take on the 12th man in the Seattle Seahawks. Rams won this last one 21-19. It was kind of a weird game, especially at the quarterback position. You know, Matthew Stafford's our MVP front runner. He's arguably the best quarterback in the league right now, the way he's playing. Sam Darnold had the big explosion last year with Minnesota, goes out to Seattle, has had a really, really good year, except for this game. Threw four picks, didn't have a touchdown, played bad in a game that was still close, and that's credit to the Seattle defense for keeping them in that game. But then you have Stafford, who threw two touchdowns, no picks, but only had 130 yards passing. So let's start with Sam Darnold, and what do you need to see different from Sam Darnold against this Rams defense to be able to put up 28 points or 30-plus points and beat this Rams team that you know isn't going to have a down offensive performance again, in my opinion?
Yeah, there's two things, and they're one of the few teams in the league that can overcome down performances, especially when the other quarterback throws it to you four times. And their defense is capable of wrecking a game, even though, like last week, Detroit put some points on them, but the Rams' offense responded as well. So there's two things about Sam Darnold. I mean, there's a lot of things I know about Sam as a player and just, his improvement and what he's been through. Then adversity, he's seen enough of it. He can overcome that. That's something maybe early in his career, Sam understands what it's like to get kicked in the teeth and battle back, which I think is going to bode well for his career as even moving forward, and already has in Minnesota as a starter and now. When somebody believed in him and stuck with him, Sam Darnold's validated their belief. He just has. Looks like the guy we expected coming out. But the two things that stick out to me about this, the Seattle Seahawks have to come out, play fast, and they got to get a lead. Now, I don't even look the depth of all the games they played, the metrics. I know this about Sam leading to point two, is that when he feels desperate is when he tries to make every hero throw on the planet. Now, he's worthy of it, and he's done it before, but it's also got him into trouble where he feels like that window, that timing, and even though it was a one-score game against the Rams, there are times when he trusts his arm so much, and I love that. I'd rather talk him down from that, that he trusts it so much, he can farve it into trouble, right, where he'll throw four picks. And yet, when you're playing the Rams, you can't throw four and still win unless the other dude's thrown four back to you. And that doesn't happen very often with Matthew Stafford, whose numbers are gaudy this year. So when Sam's out in front and they're running it pretty physical and they're handing the ball off and working play action, and he's going that way where he doesn't feel like every single play that presents, there's some guys that have the discernment of, Even when things aren't going well, it's okay. I can still throw the check down. I can fit, I don't have to fit every ball in. Sam's mentality is not that. It's gotten better, but Sam's mentality is to let it rip. And I love that about him, but you got to know that it'll get you in trouble. No, there's no question about it. And if you give that other guy that wears number 9, who's the MVP in the league, Matt Stafford, more shots, he is going to beat your ass into submission. Because even when he's not going good, eventually he is going to get you. And he is football's best quarterback this year. Superman plays in Buffalo. The best quarterback plays coming from the dude in Los Angeles. And it's not Herbert yet. It's Matthew Stafford. So Darnold has to protect it without Segs giving up that the guts. You know what I'm saying? Some guys get so concerned. Well, I don't want to turn it over to the Rams. If it's there, take the damn shot. But if you have to hesitate or take an extra hit, check it down. Get your guys the ball in space and live to play another down because your defense is pretty good. I mean, they really are. They can get after it as well known. I mean, holding the Rams to 21 points is a chore. So play fast because here's what happens, Segs, mentality-wise. When you get down and you're a gunslinger, and that's exactly what Darnold is. He was that at Southern Cal. He's been that everywhere. You couldn't be a gunslinger with the doggone Carolina Panthers and the Jets when he was playing because they both sucked ass. Minnesota, better defense, better offense. You could overcome it. And Seattle, same way. And now he's playing with an immense amount of confidence and will take those shots. But you don't want to play down to the Rams, meaning don't want to play from behind because they, when we look at the weather and can they handle the weather, the Rams, I got news for you. The Rams will run that interior physical game and your guy Blake Corum's coming. Boy, they got a good 1-2 punch when they're going and handle the ball so where they can limit possession. So the two things for this on that side of it is Darnold, protect the ball without playing scared, if that makes sense. But you've got to discern between, can I fit this one in or would it be live to play another down and not throw it to him? Because I'm telling you what, the Rams still haven't played their best football 5 games in a row, but when they play their best, there's nobody in the league better. Period.
Yeah, it is. It's scary how good this Rams team could be. Now, looking at Stafford, had only the 130 yards. You mentioned how good this Mike McDonald Seattle defense is. What does he need to do a little differently? Because, you know, hell, we expect Puka Nacua to have 130 yards receiving damn near every game, whereas we don't expect Matt Stafford to have 130 passing yards. That's it. So what do you need to change from the Rams standpoint of, okay, this is what Seattle likes to do. Here's how we combat that moving forward.
Segs, and for one is on for the Rams front seven is to force Darnold into decisions that he doesn't want to have to make with pressure. However, I don't care if it's with 4, with 3, with 5. I don't care however you design it. But the thing about both of these quarterbacks, and listen, is there any part of you that doesn't think that Matthew Stafford's a gunslinger? He was that way his whole way in Detroit. You get two quarterbacks that if they see a coffee can size window or the size of a pea, they're taking their shots. You talk about aim small, miss small. They are going to try to throw it and throw it through that car wash. And both of them got enough arm that where it won't get wet. And both of them are accurate enough to make the throw. For the Rams, to me, or Seattle to disrupt it. One is you cannot. Because it almost feels like a run game dominant. Segs, when you get beat by a finesse team, the first thing that comes to your mind is, as a player, we didn't get beat by those guys. They had a lucky, we missed our shot. They hit me with the falling away right hook, landed it, and kind of knocked us down and gave us a standing eight count. But I get knocked out by those sons of bitches. Those guys are a finesse team. But they had that finesse on that day. So you almost feel like, when you're getting beat by the run game, Segs, your Michigan Wolverines have done this a million times. When I was at SC with Marcus, we took their soul, man, because we'd run the ball. The finesse just mixed in. When you get a fist fight and the guy's beating you in the gut, I've said this before, as opposed to one lucky punch to the face, I want the rematch when you hit me in the face on accident.
Yes.
I don't know if I want the rematch when you can hit me in the gut 400 times and take my soul. And it's the same thing here. With the Rams, they can finesse you, but they are physical enough on both sides of the ball to dominate you. So with Seattle, I think one is, Segs, because Puka Nacua's possession of the football and the way he possesses running routes and he's got a quarterback mentality. He's so smart at knowing when to sit down in zone, how to separate and run away. Three of the greatest receivers on the planet, two that I played with, Steve Largent and Chris Carter, had great ability to understand from a quarterback standpoint when to sit and slide and when to run away. But even though they weren't fast, neither one of them were, and neither Nakua's that 4-3 guy.
Right.
But it feels like they're fast because they're so precise and dynamic on their route running that they can separate against man and find places and are strong enough and understanding enough from a point of view to sit in that hole. Nakua's the best in the league at right now. He just is. So it almost feels when you throw him a 5-yard hitch route or get him a bubble screen or a smoke screen on the outside or a tunnel screen, that any of those things, or he's running an option in space, that it feels like part of that run game where you're getting beat in the gut, you know, as opposed to you hit Jamar Chase on a 70-yard go. Okay, they got us once. They ain't doing that three times in the game.
Right.
But you know he's going to do it. You can't let him beat you, Segs. You just can't, because it feels like the double whammy. He catches 12 for 160. But the problem is, 8 of those felt like it was a run game knock you in the gut, right? So that's one. And two is, even though they know how to play from behind, I think you want to bore up the game if you're Seattle. Bore it for me. Make it boring as hell to where all that energy with Sean McVay's on the side, and they're going, you got to make it almost, and I know it's hard to do, but you've got to get Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay thinking like Darnold does when he's playing from behind, meaning, okay, we got to start to make some spectacular stuff.
Right.
And then because you know what? Stafford will throw it. Now, his touchdown to interception ratio is through the roof. That's why you got to get them doing something that they don't want to do in this game. I think the biggest key to the entire you come out of this game 3 catches for 60 yards or 45 yards for Puka Nacua, that will tell you Seattle's defense did every single thing they want to do. And keep an eye throughout this game on first down. On first down, what they're playing in leading into second and third down, are they in third and two? Are they in second and two, second and three? Then they will dictate the whole tempo. Got to keep them in long yarded situations so you almost make them throwing one-dimensional, because the Rams are running it, throwing it. Because I think that while there's two good runners in Seattle, the Rams are, I think, a bit more physical at the point of attack. Keep an eye on the Rams front seven, but more importantly, the Seahawks front seven on first down and how they deal with the giving Stafford different looks. You're not going to fool the guy much because he's smart.
Yeah.
And so is McVay. You're going to have to deal with formational stuff because they're going to move Nacua around so you don't get to double him from every spot.
Right. And I think another reason, you mentioned Kyren Williams and Blake Gorham, that not having Devontae Adams tonight, who's doubtful with his hamstring after injuring it last week, you got to use those guys. Like last game, those two only ran the ball, I think, 20 times combined. They need to be pushing 30, you know, combined carries between those two. And that kind of goes back to where you just want to keep punching them in the gut, keep punching them in the gut. And eventually you wear that team down and then you can kind of take off. So I think that'll be fascinating to see the run games tonight from both offenses, if they can do that on either side of the ball.
And Devontae Adams has been a really good number two, needless to say, okay, for a guy who's used to being a number one. But if you can, with him being out and not knowing how long moving forward, we'll discuss that moving forward. But in a game like this on the road without Devontae Adams, you take away Puka Nacua from dominating the football game, because he will find spots. If there's any kind of blood in the water, he's going to find it, and so is Stafford, and so is McVay. Now you're down to the third guy having to beat you. You get to know whoever the Rams decide that's going to be in this game, fine and dandy. But if the Rams can go on the road and beat Seattle in their building, and Nacua's not as productive, well, isn't Pro Bowl productive as a, you know, 5 for 55 type of game, Segs, and the Rams win, then that will tell you that the Rams defense has completely dominated the other side of the football. Completely.
Yeah.
Where they took over and Sam threw it to him again. Sam, and he's also got to get out of his, this is the Rams, man, what's the effect going to have? Didn't it happen in the playoffs? Didn't the Rams beat the Vikings in the playoffs last year? And didn't and Sam struggled now? So the last couple memories, if I'm not mistaken, I may be wrong, Sam has not had great results against Seattle, against the Rams, Sam and the Rams. this is a great opportunity at home for to shift that narrative. And when you take a look at the records, I contend that the Rams, when they're playing their best, the best team in the NFL, and yet we're looking at the Seahawks. They're playing at home. They're 11-3. They should be favored at home.
Right.
They should be. And it's hard to beat a team twice, so they should be able to split this series. So all that. But the Seahawks front seven needs to take the game over. There's no doubt about it. And part of that is not letting Nakua dominate it.
To pay off what you were saying, last year the Rams beat the Vikings 27-9 in the wild card playoffs. Darnold was 25 of 40, 245 yards, one touchdown, one pick. But I think even that stat line, while it looks okay, Sam Darnold was never in a rhythm in that game. So that
ball hit the ground a lot. They pressured him into forcing balls. Listen, no quarterback likes to, especially neither one of these guys are going to be. Darnold's underrated athleticism with his feet, and Stafford will buy a little time, but Darnold can give you a 12-yard run. You know, where you look and say, well, that's like a Burrow, right? They can make something happen, even though you wouldn't consider them a dual threat quarterback. But
right.
When the ball's coming out on time and he's throwing with confidence and gives you 5 or 6 yards. But this is neither a game that you're going to get east and west escapers. But I can tell you this, both of them on the move got enough. There's nobody in the league that has more arm angles than these two. These two cats right here will throw from 74 different arm angles. Mahomes, when he's throwing the side. But at the top of the list, these guys don't need to be on platform perfect mechanics to beat you with throws that you'll say, shit. You'll come out of tonight's game saying, how did these two make those throws? But both of them have enough balls to take shots that they shouldn't at times. But those two guys right there, are 5 or 6 quarterbacks in the league playing better than both of them? The answer is no.
Yeah.
And Stafford's at the top of the list.
And you see right there on that graphic, both 11-3. The Rams currently hold the tiebreaker over the Seahawks. So they are the one seed in the NFC right now. But if Seattle wins, that moves Seattle to the one seed. The Rams drop all the way to the 5, just like we had the other week when the Bears were 2 and the Packers were 7, and they flipped based on their game. Now they play again this weekend, and it's the same thing. The Bears are back to 2, and the Packers are sitting at 7. If that game goes the same way and the Packers win, that flips again. So we have two games that could really flip the look of the NFC playoffs coming this week, and we'll pick.
That's December, brother. That's December football, man, and I love it.
That's what you want. You want to be in those games come December. We'll pick this game later as our bet of the day, but currently the Seahawks are a 1.5-point favorites at home. Tom Brady. So we have Philip Rivers come back. I mean, we have the play where he's dropping back and he trips over his own feet, falls, gets up, kind of gets tackled again. But, you know, so obviously some people start talking. Tom Brady talked about if he could still play in the NFL right now, and here's what the great Tom Brady had to say.
Ready to go right now.
I'd whoop right now, to
be
honest.
Would you really?
Absolutely. I could go out there and play. Give me a month. I mean, I could go play with anybody.
Seriously? 31 days.
And like I said, I took care of my body great. I mean, everything is, I could do it all. And I just, you know, what I wouldn't want to do is make the commitment to play. Because it's like, I would say it's like basketball season. Do you really want to commit to playing 82 games? That takes a lot of training. And it's like, I don't want to do that anymore.
But if you could come back for just the finals.
Okay, yeah, just the finals.
So, I mean, Tom Brady could come back. You know, the body's fine. You know, he's taking care of himself. Health wise, physicality wise, you know, he's ready to go.
Is this year 3 out?
Yes.
Year 3, right?
Yes. I'm trying
took
to
took the year off, then sure. Another year where he's going to be the broadcaster, but they gave him another year. And now that I think this is year 3 out, because Baker Mayfield is in his, what, third year starting with Tampa. Is that correct? There's no doubt. I don't know how. I put it this way. You wouldn't want to bring Tom back with the New Orleans Saints. That would not be
perfect. Right.
They'd be a little bit better. They'd be better because it's Tom Brady, even at his age. But he's not out of shape. He takes care of his body, always has. Do I think that he can throw a comeback in a seam route and give you a game? I absolutely do. And when he says he'd kick ass, he's not joking. And I'm sure that is there. It's the, like you said, it's the longevity of like, oh, I'm going to train in the offseason, then go play a full season. And I'll see it. That's not something. The fact, could he go out there and do it like in the month of December for somebody if you were on a cusp of making the – right now, we'll put it this way. Would Tom Brady be better for the Colts than Phillip Rivers?
Yes.
That answer is yes. No question.
I mean,
There is absolutely no question about it. He's a brilliant mind. He knows football. He's still competitive. Would it be, would it look like Brady when he was 40? No, but would he still, put it this way, he wouldn't be the worst quarterback in the league starting.
No.
And I'm talking about right now, Tom Brady.
I guarantee him on a team like the Panthers. Bryce Young's fine, good little player, but if you put Tom Brady on that team,
they win the division.
Fighting the Bucs for the division. They're winning the division by a couple games. Let's put it that way.
No doubt. So. Absolutely no doubt. And it's the same. Brady would be productive. Could he get you where you wanted to go? I don't know. But if you put him on a team that was really good, that doesn't have that the starting quarterback got hurt, he's better than most backups in the league right now.
Oh, yeah.
At his age, even being out 3 years. I firmly believe that. Over the long haul, that'd be the hard part.
Yeah. So
in short stints, yeah.
And that goes to the point that you and Coach JB have talked about so much of just where the quarterback play is in the game of football, from the lower levels all the way up to the NFL, the starting level, the backup level. It's just, in my opinion, not where it's supposed to be. And this is a discussion for another day, and maybe, you know, we could just do a show with you, JB, and even try and get another quarterback in here. And we just talk about why things are not where they should be, in our opinion, when it comes to the quarterback position in college, in the NFL, at the high school level. What are all the determining factors? But I think that's something we should.
You want to know one reason, Segs, to tease this, not a long thing?
Yeah.
One of the big reasons, and it's not talked about enough, is players, young players, don't follow, like quarterbacks. They're coming in, we expect them to play right now. They don't have a learning curve at all. And I've told you about the most undercoached position in all of sports, in any sport, is NFL quarterbacks. We put in game plans. They don't train in the offseason. You got to get your mechanics and training from somebody else. When I say undercoached, not about the game plan of the team you're getting ready to play. Undercoached about everything from the ground up in the position. From the neck up, yeah, they'll coach you and watching over it, but you still got to do a lot of the lonely work on yourself, on your own. It is the inability of young players to put their pride aside. Because everybody's got an ego and, you know, who's got the biggest package in town, right? I don't need to do that. I won the Heisman. I don't need to do that. I made $10 million in NIL. I don't need to do that. I was the third pick of the draft, and I'm going to change this. You know what they don't do enough of? Follow quarterbacks in the building around or veterans in the offseason around that say, go home and leave me alone. You've been following, you know,
right. Yeah.
Pick their brain about everything. Or get on the phone with your coordinator in March when there's no OTAs or February and say, all right, walk me through why how we're attacking cover two versus this. I'm talking about to the point where the coach says, shut your ass up, go home and get to bed. We'll see you tomorrow, to where I got to go home and spend time with my three kids and my wife. That's what
question for tomorrow.
Enough of that. We don't do enough of it to follow around. I'm just telling you, dude, I did do it. Steve Largent, and God rest his soul, recently, my guy Kenny Easley and David Craig must have thought in my rookie year, now I wasn't a first-round pick, but they went to the steam room or the sauna, I went in with them. I don't care what their private conversation was. I mean, until they told me, you know, you walk in and say, well, what do you, like, you know how a dog will walk up to you like, well, can I get involved in, are you going to talk to me, Pops? My dogs do that. They pout until you recognize them.
Right.
Kind of like a player. I just don't know why it's your profession and you want to be great. I think too many quarterbacks think they can fix it on their own. And the deep dive that you need to be great. You want to be good, do it on your own. You want to be average, do it on your own. You want to be great. If I was a backup quarterback at any point in time to Peyton Manning, I'm older than him, but if I was younger, he would have had to tell me in the offseason of the season, Sean, I'm playing golf today. You know what I would have said, or what I would encourage a young quarterback behind him to have said? Can I play with you? No, we got to force him. Okay, I'll just drive a cart as the fifth guy, and I just want to listen to your conversation.
Yeah.
And because I imagine your approach to golf is similar to football. Hit it close. Don't stay away from trouble. Know the conflict. There's water, green side. Hit it to the left, not the right. I just don't know why. And I would take $100,000 if you're making 25 or 30 million. If you're Jackson Dart, find your favorite. Eli Manning's an Ole Miss guy. Mm-hmm. I'd say I'll pay you $10,000 a month, whatever it is. And say, listen, I just want 3 days a week with you for a month. 3 days a week. Mental on the field. You don't have to do it. I'm just going to do it. You watch me work out 2 or 3 hours a day. Here's your fee. Here, we'll do it. Someone say, I don't want the fee, dude. Just come on over.
Yeah.
Or let them teach you and use it as a business. Why wouldn't you? I just don't get it. You invest in your body, into mechanics, and eating food and drinking and supplements and all the things you invest in. The one thing you don't invest in, somebody who's done it better than you, longer than you, because your ego gets in the way and you're afraid to ask them. Screw that. I do more of that. We don't do enough of that. That's something we can have a full conversation on. Players do not do enough of it.
Well, speaking of a quarterback that wants to be a part of a lot, it's your boy Cam Ward with the Tennessee Titans. He has let it be known to his GM, as the front office people of the Tennessee Titans, that he wants to meet all the coaching candidates, the head coaching candidates. He wants to, you know, have a sit down with them. But here's what Cam Ward exactly had to say.
I want to meet all of them. Every coach who's going to get the opportunity to come here, I want to meet them, have conversations throughout the whole process with them, because that's someone that I'm going to be here with, you know, for that time. So we got to just continue to, you know, me being around and being open to no matter whoever we try to hire, because I know at the end of the day, who we do hire is going to be the right fit for us, whether it's a defensive person or offensive person. They're going to make sure that every person, you know, in the right place, and make sure that every person is set up for success.
So that's a young, you know, coming off his rookie year, had an up and down year, has showed some flashes of exactly what we saw at Miami, the big play potential. I'm still working through some of the easier stuff when you see it on the field. But do you like the fact that he's told the GM and the people, the owners and everything, that he wants to meet these guys every time they come in the building and kind of, I don't want to say have a say in it, but just have a voice in the discussion when it comes to these guys? Do you like that from the young quarterback?
The fact that he's addressing it, just because you address it and want it, doesn't mean I've given it to you.
Right.
That kind of goes along with what I was saying about this. At least one thing I know about this kid from afar, at least it appears to me. Now, I'm not in his meeting room every day, but from what I hear him talk, and I don't hear any opposite from anybody, is when you listen to him talk about when he said our team's, you know, ass and that we're not good. And he's pretty straightforward, which is okay. And as a quarterback and a leader, you got to be prepared. You're going to hurt people's feelings along the way, but they'll get over it. And if they don't, then there's the bus leaves in 2 days and you can be on that one, because guess who's not going anywhere as a starting quarterback, as a rookie first pick of the draft? Cam Ward. So it's okay. Instill yourself, but don't ask for anybody to do something you're not willing to do yourself. That's one. The team is awful, and Cam Ward, it wouldn't have mattered who the quarterback was, they're not going to be very good this year. I love the fact that he wants to, you know, immerse himself into and insert himself into the decision-making. Player empowerment's fine to a point. Listen, I want Cam Ward to meet the guys that come through. Of course I do. Or even if he doesn't meet them, I want him. He ain't getting to sit in on the interview. Sorry, buddy.
Right.
That's not your job. Agreed. If that's the case, take your uniform off, go get a master's degree and be a GM somewhere, or go through the scouting, and then come on in with a golf shirt on or a coat and tie, and then you can sit in an interview. You're the quarterback. I don't think we do enough of, let me at least run it by the guy who is our quarterback. He's our future. Do you know anything about this guy? Let's say you're getting ready to interview. I don't know. I don't care who it is, right, Segs? Joe Brady.
Let's use Joe Brady.
Now, you know the reputation. First thing I do, you know what I do? I call up Joe Burrow. Quarterbacks like to hear from other quarterbacks. It's a fraternity. I call him up and say, Joe, tell me about Joe. What was it like?
Right.
And I spend a half hour, an hour on the phone with him. No problem. Or I get him on a Zoom and just walk me through. That's right. That's exactly right. Now, both of them, not just one.
Yeah, you get it from both. You get the college aspect. And guess what? Where he was 5 years ago to where he is now.
Josh Allen played his best football. He played great under Daboll. He played great. He won the MVP with Joe Brady as his guy last year. And Joe Burrow had as good a college season you'll ever have with Joe Brady as his play caller. So pick their brain and find the negatives out. And then when the coaches come to you, say, I've also done some due diligence. I've talked to these guys, the system, the rest of it. When the coach or the GM, you know, not the coach, but the front office asks your opinion. I do want my guys to have an insight, but he's not sitting in on the interviews. I'll take his insight. That doesn't mean that's the guy I'm going to hire. And I may even say, hey, man, you've done due diligence on 5 of these guys. Give me a paragraph. Just write me a paragraph out for the things you like about the 5. And then we'll look at that and we'll go from there. I do want insight. He's not making the decision. Cam needs to get to work on getting his game right. So when the new coach comes in, he watches him in the offseason, says, that's the guy I want to coach for the next 10 years. So it goes both ways, because as the head coach, you want to know who your quarterback is. Right. As the quarterback, why the hell would not want to know who the head coach is? I want his insight. He's not sitting in meetings. He's not following us around during the interview process. I want his insight. He will not make the decision, but I will let him know when we get to a point we're leaning towards this guy. We're not announcing yet. Keep it private. Bam. Final thoughts. And then I'll leave it at that. But I'm still making the decision that paid people that make these personnel decisions make. But I would want every quarterback to at least understand why you're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's as simple as, hey, you know, we have our morning interview. We're going to do a little bit later in the afternoon. How about you two go to lunch for an hour and you guys just talk? See how you feel about each other. And then when he comes back, you can talk to the coach about what he thought about Cam Ward. And then after the interview's over, the GM could call Cam Ward and say, hey, what'd you think of lunch? Would, you know, give me your perspective. That's all it needs to be. That's all it needs to be right there.
Such a great point. I've shared this with you in the past, but in my recruiting trip to USC, and like I said, when I say as the guy who was the number one recruit in the country, I thought I was going to USC to be told how great I was. I'm 17 years old. And John Robinson, I think I told you, my parents and I went up for our visit from Escondido, drove in for the official visit. And, you know, you're usually going there. And I got some of that. I mean, I got to go to parties. They took you to great dinners. And Pat Hayden walked me around campus and talked to me, which was awesome, the tradition of Southern Cal. But when I got there, my mom and dad, Coach Robinson, told my mom and dad, he took them in there for a few minutes. He said, I'll be right with you. Got them, you know, a little snack to, came in and sit down with myself, Hudson Houck, and Paul Hackett. Hudson Houck, lineman with the Cowboys. Yep. I mean, the coach, what a legendary. Paul Hackett, legendary coordinator. Yep. We know he was a great coach. This was before North Turner was the defensive backfield coach. And then when Hackett left after I signed, because he got a late offer by Cleveland to go be the offensive coordinator for Paul McDonald, right, who was at SC, who he'd coached a few years, and I got it. He went to the NFL. The pay was different from college to the NFL, so he left. But during recruiting, I got there and I'm thinking, I'm going to be fat catting for 48 hours on my recruiting visit. They walked me into the doggone conference film room. Paul Hackett put me on the board. Dude, beads of sweat. I'm 17 years old. And Hackett is I love Coach Hackett, but he's a meet guy. He meets to set up a meeting to meet for the 3-hour meeting. And then after the 3-hour meeting, you meet to set up the next meeting. Dude, I'm telling you, he's a bigger grinder. And I found it out that day. And when people remind me, like Rich Gannon and I were having the conversation when he coached him in Kansas City. Rich said, Sean, and I said, dude, you don't have to tell me. I was 17 getting this. At least you're a veteran and going to be the MVP in Oakland later on. And so, but then Coach Robinson was in there, got up and left. First 15 minutes, and spent a couple hours with my family. For 90 minutes, I sat in there, and he'd get me on the whiteboard, and they'd fire an offensive line coach there, and we're going through this, and I'm like, hopefully I did well. I was fortunately coached well on the mental side, but damn, dude, people think different. But by the time I came out of there, I said, I love the grind because I was a grinder. But if you weren't prepared for it or hadn't talked to Coach Hackett, and the first thing you did, you signed with SC and you weren't a guy who loved that, your very first meeting when you signed in the fall, if he was still there, you'd have said, is that portal open yet? 30 years too soon? I got to get my ass out of here because, man, this dude grinds. So I was able to know going in, even though he's a coach, it was reverse player to coach, but it was still the same, right? It's the same approach to get to know him, sit down, and what would hurt Cam Ward with Joe Brady for an hour?
Right.
Sitting in and talking philosophy. And you're hoping, and the truth is, you're not going to kiss the player's ass, but you're hoping through that Cam sprints back to the GM and says, you know what? If you want offense, whether we hire him or not, somebody's going to hire that cat. Yeah. We're going to miss out. No problem. I'll take that into consideration.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I would like. I'd like to see that from a young quarterback who – you know, isn't demanding he gets to make the decision or is part of the decision. He just wants to be part of the process.
And he cares, man. He's immersed in it. If you're not immersed into Segs, you got to bleed it, man. You got to. Yep. I know it sounds crazy, but you can't be great. In order to do those great things, you got to do a bunch of stuff that others weren't willing to do. Stick around in the off season. Don't go to be around the facility. I know that sometimes sounds, but in the infancy of your career, that's when you're making the most strides as far as quantum leaps in your game.
Yeah.
And a second-year quarterback like Cam will be next year, the number one thing for him is know who to get and how to get them. Understanding coverage. Because when you understand all that, the physical stuff, Sigs, we already seen it, that shines. Yeah. It's what happens is the lack of the mental stuff, meaning not knowing where to throw it because you're young and inexperienced, forces you into desperation on the physical side. And you think, oh, that guy can't throw it. Well, he can throw it. He's just indecisive. And anytime you're indecisive, you make poor decisions because then you feel forced.
Right.
So you got to get ahead of the neck up first. The rest will take care of itself with your lonely work in the offseason.
Yeah. Switching over to college football, Ohio fires Brian Smith, their head coach, due to professional misconduct. I saw something about it possibly being part of the reason that he was drinking in his office, had, you know, some alcohol in his office and would have some coaches in late night after meetings or whatever, and they'd sit and have a couple drinks. I don't know if that's all it was, but I saw that. I'm like, that probably happens at every school, almost everywhere. A guy who has just a bottle of whiskey in his desk and a couple of, you know, glasses, like you see all the times in movies. Oh, hey, you know, defensive coordinator comes in, your good buddy, and you sit and have a little thing of whiskey and you just sit and talk.
Segs, if this is the reason, I don't know. Now, listen, I saw people
that's just something I saw.
Right. Can we have the same energy for and know the same? Can we dive into the details on Coach Smith as we did on Sharon Moore? We know all those, but and some of the response was, well, you got Michigan, a top program, University of Ohio. People don't even know what city it's in, unfortunately. Ohio U, should I say. And not that it matters, but the allegations are obviously serious enough to get rid of him.
Yeah,
and I'll just say this.
That came from the Columbus Dispatch, what I just said. Right. So, I mean, that's a reputable source. No
question. Very reputable. So, but my thing is, now, if 17-year-olds were coming into his office after a win and he said, yeah, man, I had yourself a shot with me. Now we got a problem. But if his coordinator and defense coordinator, after a big win, come into the office at 10 o'clock at night, you've studied tape all day, and he reaches into a desk and pulls out, well, which one do you want, Six? You can look up here, Field of Dreams whiskey. Whatever you want, Bladen, Bow Whiskey, Rebel 100, whatever it is. And you say, hey, man, cheers, and take a shot during non-business hours. As long as you're not getting in a car and driving home, you're getting all the domino effect that leads to it. I don't have a problem. I can remember, I'll leave the head coach out, but I was doing a special an interview for Sunday Countdown. I had to go and interview. It was in Miami. And a longtime friend of mine who was the head coach there, during practice, we came in after practice. You walk in, he said, Sean, can I get you a beer? So I go, you need to. But it wasn't like it was a regular thing. It was like, oh, it's a longtime friend coming in. Practice is over. Sean's not going on camera and going, hey, let's back to you, Boomer. And I'm like, you know, three sheets to the wind. But offered it. I said, I'm good. But you know, offer a beer. And I mean, I would imagine 80% of coaches have some sort of, I don't want to say flask, but some sort of way to, I need a drink after that asshole.
Yes.
Right. As long as underage, and it will, I mean, but until we know, Ohio's pretty serious if that's the allegation. But it's got to be more than that, Six, because I would imagine the same guy who fired him may also have himself a little drink once in a while when the day's over, as long as it fits the no underage and you're not doing it inappropriately. And driving afterwards, but that's for them to do their deep dive. But gone. People are really sensitive these days, man. And whatever it did, it cost him a job, and it's going to end up costing his assistants jobs too along the way, more than likely.
Yeah, for sure. Talking about the college football playoff, it kicks off tomorrow night. We have our first game, Alabama, Oklahoma. But when we look ahead, yes, I know, waiting a long time. But when we look ahead to next year's, it's going to be different again, the way it's set up. Now, last year, we all knew it was wrong when they gave the conference champions the byes. Like, that just didn't feel right. So if it happened this year, like last year, Tulane would have been the 4 seed. JMU would have been the 12 seed facing Ohio State, because Ohio State would have been kicked out by not winning the Big Ten. They would have been the 5th seed. Ohio State would have played JMU. And then, assuming they won, which they would have, they would play Tulane for their first two college, if it was like last year. Now, next year, they've, you know, signed this memorandum, which we talked about with Notre Dame, being if they're in the top 12 seeds, they're in. No matter what, no matter what the everything else looks like, they'll kick out the 9th or 8th team to put Notre Dame in. Even if they have a much better resume, Notre Dame's automatically in. Next year, the top 4 power 4 teams will be in. So the champions, the conference champions, will all be in. So this year, Duke would have been in.
Huh.
And so, I mean, I don't understand this constant changing of every single little thing that this committee keeps doing year to year. So you would have had Duke in this year. You still would have had the top G5 team in, the group of five team, Tulane in. And you would have had Miami out because Notre Dame would have automatically been in, even though Miami beat Notre Dame. And, I mean, it's just, I don't understand why they have to tinker with it so much. We obviously saw last year was wrong. Made the adjustment. Now leave that adjustment for a while. Let's play it out a few years and see, okay, here's where we can tweak it. The problem is, in 2 years, we're going to have 16 or 24 teams or 32 teams. And it's just something that we're going to water down college football so much that it's going to kind of start to suck a little bit, in my opinion.
Sex happens in every government. I mean, the NFL is going to change rules this offseason just to change because it makes them look like they're earning their money. Oh, we got to change a rule to make it look like we're grinding in the offseason to change a rule. Even a rule that you say, there's nothing wrong with this rule. Look how long it took them to get, I mean, all these years to come back to it. Look how long it took them to do something real simple. Both teams in overtime get to possess the ball offensively, have to play defense. And one way or the other, you're playing special teams. Because if you don't score, you're punting or going forward on fourth down. If you do score, you're kicking an extra point or going for two to challenge, whatever it is you do, right? And then we said, I got a novel concept. Don't let a coin toss affect the flow of the game. And when anybody used to say, well, your defense has got to get a stop. Yeah, but they didn't. So now your defense got to get a stop. Think how long it took us to get to a simple point. There's only two things that, for me, need changed. I mean, college football, there's a lot of things. But in this, what we're discussing here, we're moving the goalposts again. One is, I don't need the four Power Four conference champion winners to get an automatic bid.
Right.
If they're one of the best 12 teams in the country, give them the bid. Duke is not one of the 12 best teams in the country, and they would have been in, and they shouldn't have, even though Manny Diaz did a nice job. You don't lose, what, five times?
Five.
Get in. I don't care what you do in the conference championship. Just tells me your conference sucked. Okay, that's one. You lose five times and you're the conference champion, your conference sucked ass this year. Doesn't mean every year. Doesn't mean you don't have good players or good coaches. Wasn't good. And not worthy of the top 12 pick.
No, not at all.
That's it. Simple. One is find me a committee that to save your ethics and values and morals that, oh, these guys live by ethics. They wouldn't dare vote for their favorite team in their conference.
Right.
Your ass. Give me 13 committee members that have zero affiliation with the Power Four when it comes to athletic director, president, whatever it is. I don't care if they were an alumni at Stanford and Stanford's being considered. I like smart people, but people that aren't currently affiliated with the program that are outside thinkers that just love college football, watch a ton of it, like they do the, like some people do the Heisman. They don't need to be named people. They don't need to be in a power position. They just need to know football. One, give me 13 of those. And then the second one is save all the other stuff. Give me the 12 best teams in America. It's not that hard. You vote them all year long. And this year it was fraudulent because Tuesday before the Sunday's final show, you had Miami behind Notre Dame. And then 3 days later, when neither team played, you had Notre Dame behind Miami, whether you think what it should be or not. So basically you used all those weeks to just tease us. And then you were going to okey-doke whoever was the other team regardless. Just so we'd tune in. That's why you knew what you were doing 2 weeks before that, before you did it. So to me, give me a committee and give me the 12 best teams in the country. And if James Madison's undefeated and they beat two Power Four teams handily, then they should have been in it. I get it. Under the rules now, I get it. But if you really want to do the best, give me a clean committee that has no bearing on the athletic director at Ohio State or USC shouldn't be in the committee.
Right.
But or conference. No, you just can't. It's a conflict of interest. You can't commingle funds. Stay out of this, man. You'll get in trouble for you can't share insider information. Well, some do and don't get caught for it and get rich. But, you know, can't do that or you get in trouble. Big fine and you lose your gig or get delicensed, whatever they call it when it comes to the financial world. But it's the same thing here. Give me 13 that aren't tied to a conference and or a program in the power in college football. I mean, you're telling me a team that's eliminated that's 4-9 saves? Does that make sense? Or 4-8 doesn't have an athletic director that's smart about football?
Right.
I'm talking about it's in a smaller division. I don't care if it's NAIA if he watches football. Yeah. I don't care. It could be a broadcaster. I don't care who it is. Give me your best 13 and then pick your best 12. Because under this rule, if Duke goes 7-5 next year and wins the conference championship and gets in, we're going to cry that this is the worst thing that could have ever happened because they don't deserve to be there. And once again, finally, I'm not picking 12 teams to hope that one team can win one playoff game. The 12 teams I'm picking, the 12 best in the country, are the 12 teams that we think all of them have a chance to be the national championship. 12 teams don't have a chance to be the national championship this year. I'm sorry to tell you, Tulane ain't winning the national title as much as I love their coach. They're just not. Too much attrition, too much physicality, and too much depth for the others. Now, 2 years from now, they may be Indiana. I don't know. But right now, and they're not. And they're good, but they're not. The 12 teams, we don't have the 12 best teams playing. Under the current rule, yeah. But the 12 best teams in the country are not in there. And Notre Dame could argue that if they did it the right way, they'd be in it. They would be. So this is just, it's a pretty simple fix. The problem is we don't like simple. We like people to be in chaos. And that's exactly what this is.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun weekend of football. I'm just pulling it up here. We got tonight Rams at Seahawks, Thursday night football. Tomorrow we got Bama at OU at 7 Central, 8 Eastern, first game of the college football playoff. Saturday we have Miami taking on Texas A&M at 12 p.m. noon Eastern, 11 Central. We got Tulane at Ole Miss at 3:30 Eastern. We got Eagles Commanders at 5 p.m. Eastern, excuse me. Then we have JMU Oregon. It's 7:30 Eastern, and Bears Packers at 8:20 p.m. Eastern time. So we got a lot of good football games Friday and Saturday, and then we have our full slate of NFL games come Sunday. So, I mean, it's going to be a weekend where get cozy with your chair, sit back, have a couple drinks, and just enjoy a lot of good football, a lot of good, meaningful football this late in the year where games obviously really matter in college football playoff because you lose, you're out. And in the NFL, we got a lot of games that have major playoff implications.
Segs, I can kind of make the argument. We got a lot of good weekends of football, but it's really playoff football in the NFL because a lot of teams will be left by it is. We have playoff college football and NFL with the NFL on Saturday just adds more intrigue. And then we got Friday. I can make the argument this is one of the better weekends in the pro and college football spectrum as well, aside from the good hoops and stuff they're playing. So I'm with you 100%. I mean, 100%. I love it. And it gives us a chance on that Friday night game to tune in. And then with all the Christmas holidays, so you're getting a good Christmas gift, and it's a 3-dayer with the weekend with the college football and NFL, both Saturday, Sunday, Friday. So I like it.
Before we get to our bet of the day, which Thursday night football, I don't know if you saw the story of Puka Nacua's brother being arrested along with stealing the car of a rookie for the LA Lakers. I mean, what is going on here? Why are you out stealing the car of a Lakers rookie when your brother's one of the best wide receivers in football? I mean, I don't get it.
It's something my buddy would have done to me in college, but they would have kept it. Felt like it was gone. Let me go to bed not knowing. File a police
like
report.
A prank?
And then return it the next. Oh, yeah. I would have done it. And the cops would have came and they would have taken one night of an arrest today. Got his ass. We all have that group, right? The group on the bat when you're playing golf that they unleash when your carts, golf clubs on the back of the cart. My buddies do this every tournament we play in, Sage. That's the first thing you do. 6 months later, you see him and you touched him last. Now he's chasing you all over. Same thing. You're like, okay, you dumbass, I'm getting you. This is a little more severe, but my buddies, that would be something they would have done. I'm hoping somehow we find out that that's their guy, their friends. I don't know, Sage. And that maybe, just maybe, there was prank involved. But if it is, like, this is a deep dive. And what are you doing? What are you doing? They're going to find you. It's even if you didn't care about yourself, it's a bad look for your bro, you're your brother. Yeah. It just is. And if you're the rookie of the Lakers, you're like, come on, man. What are we doing here? What? So I'm hoping, and I haven't done a deep dive into this story. I saw it, Segs, and kind of glanced over it. So I don't know how serious it is, but I can tell you this. It's serious if it's real, but I could see my buddies doing something like this on the other end returning the favor. Yeah.
You're getting arrested for Grand Theft Auto. That's going to be pretty serious. I mean,
I was about to say, and to have to be able to go and have the, and hope that the guy you were dogging, your buddy, is all in on letting you off the hook because you put him in a, you made him nervous or it's a nice vehicle. But I wouldn't tempt that. Let's put that. No. I just got buddies dumb enough to try and pull it off. Crazy enough and fun enough, if that's what you want to call it. But if it's serious, it's a bad idea because you hit it. Grand Theft Auto ain't no joke. They're going to get your ass.
Yeah.
They will always get you.
Boxing great Terrence Crawford is retiring from boxing. But I know, speaking of boxing, what you're most excited about this weekend is the Jake Paul, Anthony Joshua matchup. I think it's tomorrow night on Netflix. You know,
where
Joshua's like 6'5". Humongous Jake Paul, like when they were standing next to each other, Jake Paul's like at his chest and looking up at him. I'm like, what is this for? If Jake Paul wins this fight,
rigged,
we know it's rigged. Like this dude just towers over him. Yeah, I mean,
I've watched one Jake Paul watch. So did I, and it was my
just went to a buddy. Yes, that was the one I watched. Yes. I was just thinking, I already forgot who it was against, but it was Tyson, yeah. And it's just, I don't know, whatever. But
it seems weird saying.
He's a great boxer.
Oh, there is no doubt. And I don't blame him. It's time to get out. By the way, we'll have Roy Jones Jr. joining us next week at like 12:15 on Tuesday Central Time to talk a lot of stuff, boxing, sports, and a lot of stuff that goes into it. So that'll be a blast. But good for Terrence, and congratulations on his retirement. But yeah, no, I don't think with all this football and stuff going on, I saw my one guy that he'll take with him that Mike Tyson didn't knock Jake Paul out. You can run that forever, and he could say, and I got a lot of respect for Jake Paul's grind, I do, but I have a hard time watching it because it doesn't feel like the other guy ever attacks like Jake Paul does in these, like he's supposed to win. I'll just leave it at that, even though I love his grind and I think he's really good, but you're fighting against some guys and just the size difference in this one's a little bit different, but I'll look for the results the next day.
Yeah, Jake Paul's weighed in at 216.6 pounds. Anthony Joshua came in at 243.4. Almost a 30-pound difference.
Right, and Joshua has a fighting background too, right, Say?
Yeah, he's been a professional boxer for a long
time. That's what I'm saying, but he's not a MMA guy. He's a boxer, right? So, you know, sometimes you say, well, they're good at taking you to the ground, but they're not good standing up and fighting, you know, fists. They're good with their legs, right? Well, in this case, this is a boxer who's got him outweighed by damn near 40 pounds or whatever, and height-wise and reach, I would imagine. So we'll see. We'll see what his box skills. It'd be like me being a similar age, say, it's like when I retired. No offense to those guys, but if a guy could outthrow me that was off on the street that hadn't done it, it was just a YouTube football guy. Not saying there's not good. There's YouTube golfers that are damn good. They're shooting, playing scratch golf. But I'd like to think that, well, just pride alone, I'm not letting this sucker beat me. I'm gonna be a little more accurate because I was one of, 96 or whatever. If you go 1 through 3 for your 10 years that you thought, no way. Well, I guess boxing's different, Sings.
Yeah.
I guess that you can be a YouTube guy and turn into knocking out people and beating people that have worn belts or that are just too old, I guess, to hit back.
Yeah, and I mean, whatever. We all know it's just for the money. He just wants a payday, and Netflix.
Can't blame him. $10 million. I'll go in there and let him knock me out. I won't have to let him. And I got a problem with that. I can deal with it. I've been knocked out before.
Yeah.
On the football field, so I can take one more shot to the chin. Matter of fact, this one will just be faster because I'm not as adept to deal with it was like when I was 32 taking shots.
Right.
I'll take the shot now. I got no problem with that. And by the way, Zach Wilson, I love you, dude.
Oh, yeah.
The reason why you're not starting is because, one, we know who you are right now. Secondly, they don't know who Quinn Ewers is. Thirdly, they probably don't want balls yanked into the ground in the first 4 series of the game. I'm kidding. That's not fair because I do know he's skilled. But isn't there a reason at this stage? Don't you want to see what Quinn Ewers has? Haven't we got an idea of Zach Wilson's skill set? Just comment, man. And if Quinn's struggling, maybe they go to you instead of Tua. And I know Tua doesn't like it either. Oh, well. Got to win if you don't want to lose that job for 50.
Be ready
million.
To play when your name is called, and his name Bingo. Hasn't been called yet. So Quinn Bingo. Ewers.
Maybe he'll have a Sam Darnold epiphany, and he'll do the same thing Sam did.
Maybe. Maybe. All right. Let's end the show as we do every day with our bet of the day. We got Thursday Night Football, Rams at Seahawks. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Seahawks -1.5 as the home team. 42.5 is the over under. What do we like here, Sean?
You know, Sigs, going on a show, a Rams show earlier a couple days ago, I was raving about them. It almost sets up like, okay, you're on the road, could be raining, a little colder, you're out Devontae Adams. This like reeks of Rams defense playing better and winning. I think this is going to be a field goal. I'm going to take the Rams on the road. I am. As much as I like Seattle and I love what they're doing and I know it's hard to win too, I think the Rams almost at this stage, well, they're battling for home field advantage. It's a huge matchup. But I don't think they like the way they played, even though they won the first time around. They're probably not going to get four picks from Sam. The offense is going to have to pick it up. I just think the Rams are a little bit better, although I think the Seahawks can be a dangerous playoff team. I'm going to say the Rams sweep the series and go on the road and win this football game and deal with whatever inclement weather they get. I'm going to take the veteran quarterback slightly over my Trojan. Give me the Rams by a field goal. I take the Rams on the money line on this stage right off the bat. They were 1.5-point favorite. Yeah, I would take them to win the game, and it may be a point. It may be a field goal. I don't think it's much more than that. The Seahawks will be ready to play tonight.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really fun game, good game. I'm taking Seattle, just being at home.
I get it.
I think Darnold will bounce back from the horrid game he had about a month ago against these Rams. Jackson Smith and Jigba has just been incredible this year. Yeah. He's almost at 100.
Think about the skill set of quarterback receiver in this game, Sags. The two quarterbacks, the two receivers. It's crazy.
He has almost 1,600 yards already, Smith and Jigba does. So it's going to be a fun game. I think it will be a close game, but give me the Seahawks by a field goal, and they cover and that
makes sense. I fully get it. I'm just kind of riding my feeling about the overall Rams, but this game right here going to go a long way, man, at this stage of the year. And they both know it. Yeah, and I don't even with the Rams win last week, Sags, they didn't play their best football.
No.
So there's a sense of urgency by both. And I'm like you, you're taking Seahawks by a field goal. I got the Rams by a field goal. I think they'll end up winning, although it'll be a better offensive game than the first one you saw, regardless of the weather.
Tomorrow, we'll start looking at the college football playoff games. We got all four Friday night, and then Saturday we have three. We got big-time NFL matchups to get to. So, and I mean, there is a lot of good college hoops on Saturday too. So we've got a ton to talk about, but we're going to focus heavy on the college football playoffs and the big NFL games that have major playoff implications as we wind down to just the final 3 weeks. We got 3 weeks of the NFL season left, and we've got, 4 weeks of the college football season when it comes to the full playing out of the playoffs. So we'll talk about it all tomorrow, get you ready for the games. We'll do our six-pack of picks, which we'll probably do all four college games and then maybe a couple NFL games thrown in there as well. And we'll get at it. And then come Monday, we got Coach JB, and we'll break it all down for you. So we'll get you ready for it and then break it down for you come Monday.
Love it. So can't wait. Should be a fun one and a good game tonight.
Yeah, make sure you like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Thanks to Triple E, Laura Bailey, as always, making us sound good. We got the dogs barking in the background. We will be back tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central. We'll talk to you guys later. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.